Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
So TriStar Pictures, am I right? No?
What?
I'm just sling balling some ways to get this started.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, So September 11th, am I right?
Fuck.
Oh, no, wait, that one's bad. But that's
how
when it came out.
Open beer. Let's open that.
Candyman
wait,
came out
what?
September 11th, 1992. I'm not being that weird.
Oh, I see what you're doing. You're trying to segue us into actually talking about the movie.
He's trying to make us
getting busy.
Jobs here.
It's that movie that stars that guy with two first names.
Shit.
That's right. Hey, that's Dan right. Ray, can that guy edit or what?
Right.
Oof. One of these will work.
I was just.
Ooh, I found a fun fact.
Oh.
Did you know that the bees were bred specifically for this movie?
I do.
That's because you also read
IMDb. I also
read
the fact, yeah. But wait, tell us more.
They needed to make sure that there were only... that the bees were only 12 hours old, so that they looked like mature bees, but their stinger wouldn't be powerful enough to do any real damage. Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Wow, bees mature freaking quick, Styles.
That is an amazing fun fact.
See, look at that. Look,
I'm blown away.
It's Benjamin Button bees, dude.
Yeah.
They rapidly age.
When I was watching that, I was like, there's no way that is a prosthetic. That's no way that's a fake head of Tony Todd. These bees coming out of his mouth and everything. I was like, those are real fucking bees. I said, this guy's a monster.
Yeah, they stuck.
He's a legend.
They stuck a dental dam in there and just filled his mouth with bees.
Yeah. Oh my god, insane.
Yeah. No, he
got so many uses for a dental.
He got stung. Let's just do all the trivia right up front.
Boom.
So he got stung in this movie like 22 times, and after the first couple, the only way he would keep filming this kind of scene was they started giving him $500 every time he was stung. So he was like, all right, cool. They just turned it into a money-making effort for him.
I'll get stung by bees for $500.
Cool. I know, right?
Yeah.
$500 a bee sting? Hell yeah, sign me up.
Yeah. When Virginia Madsen was allergic to bees.
Oh, shit.
And so they had a EMT on set just right off camera every single day she was around the bees.
Hmm.
In case she, you know, puffed up or whatever happens.
I feel like that's kind of playing with fire.
Probably.
Yeah. They didn't care back then. In the 80s, it was like, we made movies.
It's like the Wild West of Hollywood.
The Wild West.
The 80s were the Wild West of Hollywood.
Maybe not so much.
Anyway.
I mean, compared to this, like, green screen pampered, you know.
Well, that's true. Talk to the tennis ball. It's a monster.
Right. Perfumed butt powder that they use now in movies. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
Perfume butt powder.
Yeah, tell us more about this butt powder.
I'm sorry, I don't have the Wikipedia page open to that one.
Be a special bonus episode.
It's too bad Grace couldn't join us for the podcast tonight, though. But we do have a special guest.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Tony Todd? No.
Tony Todd, no. Luckily, we were able to get the Melvin rep to come in.
Oh, yeah, for the whole state of Oregon.
For the whole state of Oregon.
From Melvin Brewing.
Yeah, she was able to come in.
Yeah, why don't you introduce yourself?
With us.
Basically, we were real lazy with our guest stars today.
Look, the cost was right.
So actually, we had this one planned way back.
This
that
was
we were
one of
do...
like the first five we started talking about.
When we started just like randomly planning to do a podcast, we made a list of we should do this movie with this beer.
Yeah.
And one of the really obvious ones, because it totally is, was Candyman, which is the movie we're doing tonight, with Melvin Killer Bees. Well, we were waiting because we were going to have Ben, who was the Melvin rep at the time and a buddy of ours, come and be on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That never happened. Ben, Irish goodbye, 86 out to friggin' Colorado.
Yeah.
And now I'm the Oregon rep.
Well, and then the beer itself went away for a while because of distribution issues.
Yeah, there were all kinds of, it was a hot mess. So it was a little hard to get back, but we're back
know.
In the market.
I smell foul play. I think there's a carefully manipulated game of...
Grace sabotage the whole thing.
I did not sabotage anything.
So that she could not only be one of the co-hosts, but also one of the beer reps that... Special guests.
I get to multitask.
Yes, that's right.
That's what I do best.
Hey, but congratulations on the new position.
Thanks.
The new
I'm
show.
Pretty fucking
that's
stoked.
Pretty
Melvin's
cool.
rad.
Are you liking it so far?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still kind of figuring out what the hell I'm doing, but I like it.
Nice. Well, good thing you have that spiral bound.
Don't make fun of my notes,
2019 man. Corporate profile it's there for sales profile.
He's making fun of that. Meanwhile, I look over at his notes, and it's in, like, font size 4.
I know.
At least mine's for work.
How can you even read that?
Hello.
Especially with your vision.
Oh, man. I would need those, too, to read
you
that.
You just made those for shits and giggles. Mine's for work, man.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I don't have spiral bound. You ain't fancy.
You don't have color. Kinko's, bro.
Yeah, you don't even have color.
Yeah, FedEx did this.
That's it. From now on,
I sent it via email, and they printed it, and I picked it up.
I did that with flyers.
There's magic boxes that do cool things.
I did that with flyers last night for that we can take to the Portland Horror Film Festival, which is this week.
Son of a bitch! That I'm going to produce notes in this fashion, and then there'll be something we can sell.
Once you get your first cell phone, then you'll learn other technologies.
Email.
Yes, then email.
The internet. Well, no, he obviously knows how to use the internet because he has 900 pages of notes.
Wait till you see my boom mic.
Oh.
I feel like that's so sexual and creepy, and please keep your pants on.
I'll just say it has attachments.
Ew.
Yeah, and by mic, he means
still
microscope.
Gross. Still gross.
So do you got flowcharts and pies and graphs and
she's got and beer.
I have beer.
That's what I heard.
Done.
Because that's what's important.
All right.
So tell us about Melvin. Tell us about this beer since you're now the official pro.
I am. So Melvin started back in 2010 with a little 20-gallon brewery in the back of a Thai restaurant.
Son of a
called Tie Me Up and
Tale as old as time.
Jackson Hole. Whatever you want to call it. Oh, I just sprayed beer all over myself. Yeah, sorry.
That's right.
My bad.
If I had $1 for every brewery started in a Thai restaurant, you know what I mean?
Right. You'd have $1.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, things just kind of steamrolled from that point. They eventually got up to a 3-barrel system, started winning some awards. And then shit got really cool in 2015. GABF awarded Melvin Small Brewery and Brew Pub of the Year, which is fucking huge in beer nerd land.
Sure.
So eventually, later on in 2015, the state of Wyoming actually gave them a grant for $3 million to build their 20,000 square foot warehouse.
Wow.
God damn it.
That would explain a lot as to why they're way up in there.
Yeah. So the production facility is 45 minutes, I think it's south. I have not actually been there yet. But 45 minutes away from Jackson Hole.
Okay.
I don't know exactly which direction. I think it's southwest a little bit, but that doesn't really matter. It's out in the middle of freaking nowhere in Wyoming.
Do you get to go there someday?
I get to go this summer.
Oh, man.
Woo-hoo. I'll be there in July.
For Melvin Madness Days.
Yup. Yes. Exciting. But yeah, so, I mean, how many breweries get a grant from the freaking state to build their brewery?
I don't know. How many podcasts get a grant from the state to drink beer? That's the question. I
need to
get
on that. I need to use my weird grant writing skills and work on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now they have a 6-acre property with a 30-barrel brew system. And we're rocking out badass beers. We're known for kind of our big beastie IPAs, super hot, forward, boozy, all the things Lee loves in life.
Give me more.
But that's not what we're doing today. No. We're doing Killer Bees, which is an American blonde ale with honey. So this beer, I just dumped beer.
Oh, went in a sales book. It's
right?
Gone.
It's fine. Well, it's not the first time it's had beer on it.
At least that was all recorded, so.
Won't be the last.
We just play it back and you'll know all the same
stuff. Either
blood
or beer.
I was just looking at the amount. I couldn't remember how much honey. Around 8 pounds of light clover honey per barrel.
Would you say that's a torso full of honey?
Oh, easily.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at the cover of this can. I'm looking at the label of this can. It feels weird saying label when, you know, it's just screen printed on there, but whatever.
Yeah.
And I really like the tie-in of the Melvin B-Man that's on here opening up his chest cavity and a huge honeycomb inside from which he's pouring this beer. Mm-hmm. Because that's obviously
almost exactly what happens in the movie.
Really good tie-in. Well, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
He has a chest full of honey.
You know what I like? You guys, Grace had mentioned, it's obvious. We got killer bees here teamed with Candyman. But unless you watch the movie,
you don't know
the bee connection. So, you know, I think it's more cool and subtle than that.
I want to say that, like, the cover of the film has, like, a bee, like, on his chin or something like that, if I'm remembering it correctly.
I think you might
be right.
It's
been a while since
I've looked at the cover.
What's that? Just kind of like a little nod. Or whatnot.
Speaking of the bee guy on the can, one of the cool things about Melvin is all of our beers have their own character.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so it's like the Avengers of beer, is what you're saying.
Kind
of
is.
Yeah. Cooler than that.
But cooler.
Yeah.
No, I'm...
Yeah.
But yeah, so we have an artist who designs basically a random character. So like 2x4 has a carpenter man who's cutting off his own arm, so he stops drinking 2x4. Mm-hmm. And there's a hophead guy.
What a quitter. That's all I gotta say.
Right?
There's a quitter. Drunken Master's got a crazy elephant and a straight jacket. We've got all kinds of crazy characters.
Hey, there's some Melvin trivia that I don't know, despite the years of drinking Melvin, that I can now ask you. What's with the elephant mascot? Why is the elephant Melvin's thing?
Where'd we start?
Wyoming?
Thai restaurant.
Oh, okay.
Tie me up.
Okay.
Tie me up. Their original logo has an elephant.
It's actually
a little baby fetus elephant. It looks like a fetus. It's hidden on every can. I don't know that I remember where it is on Killer Bees.
That is so...
Oh, they hide a little thing on every can?
Yeah, usually there's the little elephant on somewhere, too.
Well, there's a little elephant on the side. You mean like that?
Nope.
No?
It's too easily.
Huh. I know. Easy.
Wow, this is
so
cool.
So, like, you can see it on, like, Jesus's belt. It's this little bitty guy.
Okay, yeah,
I gotcha. It's somewhere, I'm sure.
Is it on the tap handle there? No, that's the M.
Is it on the tap handle?
Please stay tuned while we
don't remember
search
where
this
the
can.
Heck it is.
Yeah. You know, this is an adult version of Where's Waldo.
Let's not give it away anyways. If you want to see it, go buy your own Killer Bees.
Yeah, go buy your own Killer Bees and find the
You know what I love about this superhero guy here?
Hmm.
He has no face.
He has no face. That's pretty creepy. But he'll fuck you up, right? He'll come out. A stinger will come out. He'll sting you really bad. You'll be all like, ah, that really hurts. And he'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry that hurts. He'll rip open his chest and he'll pour you a beer because he just stung you.
Heck yeah.
Hey, I mean, it's the least you can do if he's going to kill you.
Yeah.
If you're allergic to the bees.
Look, man, I know your time's about up. And I know my creepy hive face doesn't show sympathy, but here's a beer.
Hmm. You know, the longer I look at this can, the more I'm like... This is pretty awesome. I mean, it's just
really
kind of bizarre
really
and
faces
crazy.
Either.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
That kind of
faces are hard to draw.
Yeah, it's good that you don't, because it could make them really cartoony and silly, honestly. Mm-hmm. Instead,
Striper.
Each one's kind of cool. Oh, yeah. Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Swarming, it says on top. Swarming. Anyways, super good beer. Really light. Perfect for this time of year as it's starting to heat up.
It's river beer. It's something that you want to just knock back and... Nice sunny day.
Some yard work.
Super crushable.
I forgot how good this was. Mm-hmm. I haven't had one quite a while. I think last summer, actually.
I know. It's kind of one of those beers from us that people don't always think of.
Yeah.
Because they're so used to 2x4 and IPA and all the crazy shit we come out with all the time that I feel like Killer Bees gets a little bit forgotten.
Yeah, Killer Bees is much more of kind of a everyday fridge beer, I think.
Yeah.
At least for me. That's awesome.
Jesus. That's my fridge beer.
Jesus is pretty good, too.
Yeah. That's the lager, right? The Mexican lager?
Yeah. Jesus is her Mexican.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. All right. Well, cool. Thanks for the sales pitch.
All kinds of fun beer.
We're sold. We'll drink it. So when was the last time you guys saw Candyman before we just decided to do this?
I don't know how old, but I was not very old. Probably too young to be watching Candyman, and literally all I remembered about that movie before I watched it again was gross toilets.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah,
like that's what was burned into my brain, was like really icky toilets.
Yeah,
like that's all I remembered from that entire
from when she's
movie.
In the Cabrini green or whatever.
Yeah,
and it goes into that. Yeah, all right,
that's like really the funny. Weird like childhood memory of like Candyman. I'm like, I don't know, there's toilets.
Well, that
gross.
Was a particularly scary, violent, very hostile and impressionable scene in the movie anyway.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
You know, above and beyond the fucking toilets that were not only piled in feces, but also there was graffiti all over the wall in feces too. There was particularly
a lot of poo.
Chunky and sculptured.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I must have blocked that out or not realized what the hell it was when I was a kid. But yeah. I noticed that now as I was like, oh, those are chunky poo words. That's really gross. Yeah. Like there was a lot of moments watching this.
I don't think I had seen it for at least a decade. At least. Somehow it's just one of those that I don't own. You know, I didn't own it, which is surprising. And so when I looked around and turned out none of us owned it, I was like, yeah, that's kind of how this movie rolls. Like, we all remember it. We all enjoyed it. But it just kind of...
It didn't ever seem to really claw on, like, Freddy and Michael and all of those. But I... Whenever I saw it, it has been so long to where I didn't remember much of it other than it was Candyman dude pops out, say his name, he hooks you. That's all I recalled of the whole movie.
Yeah.
Period. Until I watched it again.
I always just remembered the big spray painted face where the hole where his mouth was and she goes crawling out of it. And
you guys
that was
a
very iconic image.
That seemed
about toilets.
But still, it was just it was that one image that I remembered. Yeah.
We have a higher sensibility there.
Well, you were older.
I remember the face, but I don't remember where the face came from. You know, I have that memory I know this face. Oh, that's where it came from.
Yeah.
I was surprised with how clean of a movie it was from start to finish.
Yeah.
And how good it was. I thought that I didn't remember it because it was, you know, a B-rated half-assed, you know, Carpenter film or something. But it turns out not so much.
It had sequels. Come on now.
I bought it immediately after watching it again. I was like, why don't I own this? Mm-hmm. I just went and grabbed it because I forgot how much I liked it. When was the last time you saw it, man?
Probably about the same time you did.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's probably together like eons ago at some Halloween thing where we barely paid attention anyways.
Exactly.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure you guys were holding each other's hands at the same time watching it.
Hands. Yeah, probably not. Well, if you haven't seen it, it's pretty straightforward and it's actually fairly 90s in what it's all about. So you got a college student researching urban folklore. In Chicago.
Graduate student.
Cool.
Don't do...
You're paying someone else for a paper, you're a college paper.
Right, exactly.
It's all good. She locks on to and becomes infatuated with a local myth, which is of the Candyman, which is very much Bloody Mary inspired. The thought is if you say Candyman's name five times in a mirror, then this guy with a hook for a hand appears behind you and will kill you.
So three?
Five for him. Five? Three for Bloody Mary.
Oh, yeah. Maybe
and three for Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Beetlejuice could have been a little more original. You know?
Candyman, like,
four, two and a half.
Prolong it a little bit. He's like,
two and a half.
You got to say it five times before I come there.
You got to mean it.
Come on.
Well, see, they can't do two and a half because actually, I think in Beetlejuice, there's a lot of people saying it two and a half times.
Yeah, they are. No.
So she ends up going to Cabrini Green, which is a kind of famous project at this point, although it's gone now. I think the last part of it was torn down, less than a decade ago.
Oh, yeah. One of my gals that works for me, she lived in Chicago, and she has stories that she recalls of her dad driving by Cabrini Green, the housing project, just to drive by and look at it. Even back then as like a bad idea tourist attraction.
Yeah, for sure.
So she said she remembers it. It just looked like something you'd see out of Beirut
like some war zone. I mean, absolutely.
Well,
and that unfortunately is how it really kind of was.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds out that in this very real place, the residents there have had several murders that they are all pinning on Candyman, which, you know, of course, she believes are probably just gang violence or something like that. But the residents believe that this Candyman person came and killed these people. So that's where she kind of hones in to make her study on this topic a little more original. And, I mean, that's pretty much
That's kind of the
film in a nutshell.
Right. And then she starts exploring it and, of course, uncovers more truths, faces some pretty ballsy things, I think.
Yeah.
For somebody to do that in that time.
Mm-hmm.
going to her projects and then...
I was
going to
say, she was pretty, like... I mean, think about it. Yeah, she got a set on her for sure.
Well,
she
I think it might be...
I wouldn't be wanting to walk into that joint. Like, seriously, but she kept going back.
I think it might have kind of be the way that it was written originally. Because the way it was written originally is the Cassie Lemons, who's her friend.
Yeah.
Cassie Lemons is... Clarice Starling's friend in Silence of the Lambs, the other FBI agent that is kind of gung-ho on the Buffalo Bill case with her and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And she's African-American. And I think that what I was reading was that she was originally supposed to play the lead in Candyman, which would make it a little, I guess, less – I don't know how you really say this. But for us, it's very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. To just because it is socially, it's it's more uncomfortable for us to watch this white actress go into a really, you know, unknown environment like that, that she has her own preconceived notions of and she doesn't know what to expect, than it would be to see an African-American actress go in there in the same way. So they switched those roles kind of last minute. It turns out that Virginia Madsen was just going to be the best friend.
Right.
And I think that would have played entirely different. I think a lot of that, like, person where they're not supposed to be kind of vibe wouldn't have played.
Yeah, I don't think there would have been nearly as much tension.
If it was just a college kid going to a bad part of town.
But Virginia Madsen was like a big deal back then, though.
She was,
how would she just be the supporting cast? Nobody really knew who the other
guy
was.
I think that's what she came to read for, and then they were just like, oh, well, we could probably capitalize on this. That might actually be how she got the lead.
Yeah.
I just remember reading some... some trivias about
I think the the one, the gal, Alexandria Pig, if I'm reading her last name right, I want to say, because it obviously looks like Alexandria Pig, makes me think that it can't be pronounced.
We'll say Pige.
Pige. Maybe it's Pige.
I have no idea.
There's two G's, so it's got to be something.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was the wife of the director and was supposed to be the lead role, from what I understand.
Oh, okay.
And like you said, Virginia Madsen was going to play the co-host, if you will.
Got it.
But she got pregnant, so she couldn't do it.
Oh,
all right. So then Virginia Madsen jumped in as the lead. And
so now they needed a new best friend. Okay, so got it.
A new best friend. And in fact, if Virginia Madsen couldn't do it, the director was going after Sandra Bullock.
I saw that.
I love.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. Well, I love how we hear all these facts after, and you just try to imagine a movie with those actors in it, and you're just like, wow, what?
Well, and you know what? The thing is it might have worked, because we wouldn't have had any of those notions about them. Like, if you said right now, like, you know, we're gonna film this movie about a killer, you know, leprechaun, and we're gonna get that chick from Friends.
Yeah,
you'd be like,
I know, right?
Are you? Are you really? But that's how she started. So,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. And like,
I don't know.
Eddie Murphy was approached to do Tony Todd's part.
Really?
But they couldn't afford him, so.
Oh, wow.
That would have been.
See, my brain was like, that would have been a bad idea.
Yeah.
So who knows? Oh, man.
So those things just kill me when I read these and try to imagine what that movie might be like.
Tony Todd is so much more imposing.
He's very imposing.
And just
he owns
menacing.
This movie.
I mean, just as a guy, if you just stood him in a corner and told him to be straight-faced and not say anything, you would be like, ugh, what's up with that guy? He's just a big, imposing figure. Eddie Murphy, not so much. He's pretty short, as I recall.
All you got to do is put Eddie Murphy – remember Eddie Murphy's movie, A Vampire in Brooklyn?
Oh, yeah.
And you kind of get an idea of how it might have turned out.
I don't want to remember that movie.
Never seen it. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, you're not missing much.
Nope.
So it really worked to this film's advantage, I think, though, to have a, you know, we're supposed to kind of pick her up as an affluent, you know, white master thesis. What'd you just call her? What was she?
She was a... graduate student.
I don't
student.
Want to call her a college student again.
Yes, no, she was a graduate student.
So a graduate student. So obviously, you know, she's on her way to big things and probably has at least enough money to get to where she was and all that kind of thing. And here she's going into the literal worst part of not just that city, but pretty much the worst representation of any American city at that time.
Yeah.
As far as how bad things can get with poverty and, you know, lack of resources and all that kind of stuff. So that is such a really cool dynamic that I'm so happy this movie was made in America, because originally the story that it's based on from Clive Barker, The Forbidden, is set in England in their version of the projects. Oh. And the Candyman is a long blonde-haired like dandy who like wears colorful rags and like kind of has a court jester kind of a vibe to him. And that might work for their lore and their time and all that kind of stuff, but that wasn't going to fly to an American audience. Oh, God, we would have been like, so some Fabio-looking court jester is terrorizing
like the Julian Sands,
the inner projects of London. You. Like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah, big ass dude. You know, that's exactly.
That's very much kind of the way I pictured Julian Sands. Julian like, Sands, you know, he could try to be menacing, but it wasn't going to happen. No. He's all pasty and white.
He'd be a warlock. That's it.
Yeah.
Warlocks aren't menacing.
So this, I think it was, you know, whether it was a happy accident or not, or whether it was a necessity to go, hey, audiences aren't going to understand this. Let's change it and make it this other way. However it happened, I think it's way more effective the way it is now.
I looked up The Forbidden because I was curious how the connection was made. And I couldn't quite get the suspension of disbelief to see where Candyman came from, The Forbidden.
What do you mean? Like the new character or just the story?
Just the idea. How they could say, hey, here's The Forbidden. Mm-hmm. Wow, that sparks an idea. Let's base it off this new movie, Candyman. Let's base it off mm-hmm. The Forbidden. I just couldn't see where they, how they got
well,
from
other
A
than
to
the
Z on
look
that.
Of the Candyman and the setting, the story is the same. Both of them were based on a person who was persecuted and comes back to exact revenge from that persecution that they faced. And in both stories, it's a person who's, you know, in these kind of lower income areas investigating this occurrence that doesn't believe in it and is forced to and then becomes a part of it, just like in this film. So both of those things are the same. They just had to gut the setting and make it.
Well, because there was apparently a murder similar to how they describe a murder that happened here that was a real-life murder where in a project, a tenant broke through a wall and murdered some people in the room next, you know, in the next adjacent apartment. And they used that as sort of a, you know, a premise for introducing like this interest for Virginia Madsen's character to start investigating the Candyman thing, because that's what it was blamed on in this. And also I thought that was kind of cool, but also I don't know if you get away with that kind of stuff nowadays either.
Like basing something in your film on an actual
on
murder
an actual
that occurred?
That's so close, yeah.
Probably not. I mean, A, we all have so much more access to the information. Everyone would know that it was based on that in 30 seconds when someone made a Facebook meme out of it. Which they do, whether it's true or not. And then, you know, somebody would have gotten civil offended and been like, hey, let's start a movement to make this a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I don't think you could do that. No.
There was a serial killer called Candyman.
Also true.
By the media, but it has nothing to do with this.
No, he was actually luring like little boys.
He was
candy.
Taking candy from his family's factory and luring little boys and murdering them in the 70s.
So no, the thing with...
Yeah, that was Ice Cream Man.
The thing Closer with Candyman, as I understand it,
Clint Howard.
As I understand the Candyman thing, it's based on the fact that, so, I mean, we can just talk a little bit about his lore. So the Candyman in this was an African-American gentleman in the late 1800s who was an artist who was hired to paint a portrait of a wealthy person's daughter, Caucasian, of course. And so they fall in love. The town decides that this interracial business is not to their liking, and they kill him. Mm-hmm. But they torture him first. They cut his hand off. They gut him. Mm-hmm. They leave his body out in the sun, and eventually bees come.
They smother him with honey to of some
That's
type of honey
what
to
it was.
Attract
the
bees. Yeah.
And so bees come for the honey and the sweets and all that, and they end up staying and building a nest, basically a hive, in his like hollowed out abdomen as he just lays there rotting in the sun. So pretty gruesome start to this character, and I love, but can't tell whether that start was made so that they could describe away how the character appears, mm-hmm. or whether the character appears that way really because that was the backstory that was written. And that I don't remember from the original, The Forsaken. I don't remember what that character's backstory was. I just kind of remember the way he looked.
Well, I admit the connection of like the Bloody Mary tie-in lore to bring Candyman to the forefront seemed odd to me. I mean, it was obviously a Bloody Mary thing, obviously. Sure. But why was this vengeful spirit, like, why did that bring him this way?
Yeah, it wasn't like he died in front of a mirror or died or whatever. Right. They go into that in part two.
So before you say that.
Yeah.
I decided to start doing a little bit of looking up. Say, well, what's this Bloody Mary thing?
Oh, okay.
And first of all, I found out that the Bloody Mary is actually a real person.
Oh.
It's and not only is she real, but she's royalty. Mm-hmm. The whole Bloody Mary thing got started from Queen Mary the First. And the fact that she had a major menstrual and reproductive complications and problems to where she couldn't conceive, she couldn't have a child, and she did get pregnant, and she did go 9-month term, and then the baby died inside of her, and it was a big thing, and then she got, you know, ousted because of that. So back in those times also, women would walk backwards holding a mirror and a candle and chanting in hopes to see
the face of your future husband.
So and it's into and it's called, and I'm gonna pull another dog soldier thing and bring some crazy name up here. Catoptromancy.
Okay.
Is the name of this divination that you do using a mirror to call forth images and spirits. So it was very much prevalent in the time of Queen Mary the First, this practice, and her
vengeful.
Yeah. So and during her time, because of religious disagreements, she had something like 300 plus people burned at the stake. Or burned alive or something like that too. So she became known as the Bloody Mary of the time. And then, so that's kind of where all this tie-in of this lore led to this modern sort of this urban legend type thing now of Bloody Mary and looking in a mirror and summoning her and using this divination to create it. So I thought, well, okay, that makes sense. You know, like this guy suffered a horrific death, an unjust, you know, death.
Yeah.
And you're making this connectivity to ancient witchcraft of divination through the mirrors and things like that. So it made a little more sense to me once I dove into it a bit.
I can see how it seems like a kind of a cheesy cop-out to use the say his name in the mirror thing, since that's been specifically attributed to a different urban legend. But then at the same time, every time somebody tries to come up with something unique in this, it always seems to be super dorky, like this movie that just came out last year, I guess it was, Don't Knock Twice, you know, tried to weave you this whole story about why you can't knock twice on the, like, it was a terrible movie. I don't even remember it because I blocked it all out of my brain. But it seems like when you try to come up with something too original, it just comes out cornball. So maybe they just wanted something that everyone would go, oh, I know what that does. And then also now you're going to go try it.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to go stand in your bathroom with all your friends, like, after you saw the movie on Friday, and, like, who's going to say Candyman 5 times?
Well, I think a lot of that stuff was still new back then. It's like, hey, we haven't tried this yet. You know, it hadn't been cliched and troped to death, because it was still late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, I expect that probably had
something
to do with it.
I don't remember what the impetus of him showing up was in the original story. I should have gone back and read it, but I mean, I don't know if it ties all the way back to that. Maybe they were just trying to stay true to the source material. I don't know that either.
Yeah, good question. Well, thank you, Wikipedia.
Yeah, there you go. So this movie faced a metric shit ton of backlash from people saying this movie is super racist, even though I find it to be the exact opposite of that. I love the fact that the choice of Candyman wasn't that he was like an ex-slave who, like, you know, fought back against his masters and was killed for it. Like,
yeah,
they were like, no, he was a painter. He was an artist. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just the backwards thinking yokels in town killed him because they didn't like him getting with the other daughter. There was no need to demean him.
That's why they cut off his hand. He was an artist.
Yeah.
So they did that first as a like giant disrespect to him that, yeah. Guess what, buddy? You can never paint again.
Mm-hmm. So I thought this movie actually took the high road in a lot of that. But the reason it was getting bashed on was for using Cabrini Green. Because in the film, it's a place that this white female is terrified to go. And even her black best friend is going, we have no business there. We shouldn't go there. We're going to get killed. Like, we should not go there. And then when they do go there, it's exactly what they expect it to be. It's full of gangs. They're being chased out. They do meet some friendly people eventually that they kind of can bring out of their shell a little bit. But on the surface, it looks like it was being super judgy to just that low income,
you know. Well, and that goes to what you were saying earlier. You know, you pull something out of reality and you mm-hmm. make a movie out of it, and people are going to say, hey, you can't do that, man. It's too close to home. It's too sure. soon.
People are offended it's by whatever. Reality.
Yeah. Well, if you want to talk about being offended by reality, the funny part and the second half to what I think is so great about that, those people taking offense, was the filmmakers wanted to shoot in Cabrini Green. And when they showed up to film, they had to pay off the local gangs to not be run out of Cabrini Green and unable to film there entirely. They had to actually pay the gangs money to give them protection while they were there.
See, and that's
and
not
even
bad.
Then, that's the craft services. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And they were paying into the economy. Yeah. But the craft services truck apparently took some bullet holes and took some rounds also while they were there.
Oh, shit.
So I thought it was so funny that people were like, you can't portray this area in this way. But it's like, that's the way the area was.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think it's important to it's the like feel of the story.
What that Grace says. People don't like the, you know.
It's true. Yeah. And I mean, it sucks. And none of us want to see an area of our country be that way. And none of us would wish, you know, having to live in those conditions on anybody. But they're there and they were used as a device in this story. And I think they were used really well, just those truths.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. I didn't find it preachy. I just, and maybe this is a bad thing to say, I just found it to be an accurate location.
Totally. Know? Somebody from the New York Times, I wrote this down because I thought it was a really good quote. They said, it's an elaborate campfire story with an unusually high interest in social issues. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's pretty true because at the heart of it, it really is just.
You know, and that's so funny because. Back for that then to be said and to have, I'll be jumping ahead here, but to now have a director that wants to do a direct sequel, the director of that caliber, Jordan Peele,
yeah,
is the perfect man who has these things already under his belt and handles them.
Who's more
so
on top
well.
Of putting social issues into films right now than Peele is? Nobody.
Yeah. Hope Tony Todd gets a good role. I doubt that he'll revise his role, but
yeah, I've heard he's not going to be Candyman, but that he is going to be in the film, of course. Speaking of which, he's in a lot of really awesome films, and I hadn't really realized how many. I was trying to think, like, well, what have I seen him in that he's so, and all I could think of was Hatchet when he had that little thing, and we were all like, oh my god, it's Tony Todd, he's in this movie. Well, he was in Hatchet, he was in Hellfest. Mm-hmm. He's in Hatchet 2. He was in Final Destination 2, 3, and 5.
Yeah, let me bring up my two pages of Tony Todd.
Oh, there you go. He was in The Wishmaster, which was awesome because The Wishmaster, which I watched recently because I just bought the collection, was like a treasure trove of cameos.
Oh, yeah.
And he was one of those. And then he was in The Night of the Living Dead remake.
A great representation of that movie, I thought.
Yeah.
With him in that role.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
But here's the one that blew my mind. He was in The Crow. He was the gangster in The Crow with the long dreads.
Oh, yeah.
Grange was that guy's name. And that blew my mind because I was one of those kids that, like, was obsessed with The Crow in the middle of my goth phase and my comic book collecting phase. So it, like, ticked both of my current boxes.
I think I've seen it maybe
and
once.
I think I've seen The Crow probably, like, 100 times. But I never picked up that was Tony Todd.
He does a lot of really great cameos. If you've got any interest in Star Trek, he does an incredible performance in one of the episodes called The Visitor. It is deep and it tugs at your heartstrings, and he will take you on a ride.
Which Star Trek?
I was going to say, you got to be more specific. There's like 900 Star Trek shows.
I'm, what do they call that? Feeling the room? Because I know how you guys get.
I was waiting for you to be like, it's episode number 82B from the 18.
First off, you didn't say Doctor Who, so you're safe. So I'm sorry. You're
safe. It's DS9, Deep Space Nine.
Oh, I never really
And the episode's The Visitor. And he, I'm not going to go into telling you what it's about, but man, you're watching, you know, a typical Star Trek show and you're like, okay, that's cool. You know, typical Star Trek, whatever. You only get so dip. But as the shows kept going through Next Generation and Voyager and into Deep Space Nine, you started seeing some amazing writers and some amazing actor. And Tony Todd, man, he took you outside of what you think a Star Trek episode experience is going to be.
Well, and us horror fans, we like to follow our icons. And, you know, we were super excited when England was in V, you know, and all these kinds of things to go back and watch those episodes, even though it's a totally different kind of show. So I could easily see in the day of Netflix, you don't got to watch the whole season or buy it. Just go watch that one. Check out Tony Todd doing something different.
Yeah, you got a couple of, you know, reference points to the some of the characters in here. And, it's heartstrings all the way. Yeah, I look at his resume and I see this guy and all the voice acting he does, all the TV slots and the movie slots. And so much of it is horror and the fantastical and things like that. Mm-hmm. And just makes me wonder. You know, like sometimes you get a job, right? You're a guy, you're doing a job, a girl doing a job, whatever, and you hate the job. You're there because it's a job. Mm-hmm. And I got to wonder, you know, like, is he just doing the job? Like, I'm an actor. I act. I can be in, you know, NCIS, or I can be in, you know, Candyman. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I'm acting. Or does he, like, dig this stuff? Does he dig the sci-fi and the fantasy and the horror? I mean, is this part of a nerddom that he...
Yeah.
That he loves as well.
It almost seems like the more niche you are, so like the guys that don't break out of horror, they like just kind of keep doing horror, or the girls, the scream queens, whatever, like those actors and actresses that just kind of tend to stick with a genre, I don't know if they loved it to start, but it seems like they're the ones that really have that great passion for it because it really is their entire bread and butter,
yeah.
And the fans are their entire livelihood, and so... I kind of like it when someone doesn't break out past horror very much. I like it a little bit more when they do, but they still are like, but what I'd really like to do is still horror. I don't know. I think with Tony Todd, he probably really loves doing it.
Yeah, I'd love to meet him and ask him questions like that.
Yeah.
Can you make that happen for me?
Nope.
Okay.
Virginia Madsen, she was huge at the time from doing Dune.
She's got a special place in my heart.
It was pretty big. Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is she in your spank bank? That's gross. I don't like that face ever again.
Do you have a poster of her on your ceiling?
Oh. Well, she started a movie with Jennifer Connelly.
Okay.
Again.
Thumbs up.
Yum. And Don Johnson called The Hot Spot. That's a naughty movie, man.
Is that a porno?
No, it's a movie of intrigue and betrayal and murder and all kinds of shit. And there's skin. And she's fantastic.
She's fantastic.
But yeah, no, she's been in an amazing amount of things too.
Yeah. The Prophecy was where I always remembered her from. But I guess Haunting in Connecticut, which I haven't seen. And The Haunting.
Well, I mean, and she's even doing stuff now where she's doing cameos in the CW's Flash that's running currently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That explains why they got her for Swamp Thing, then.
No, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. Let's talk about Vanessa Williams really quick.
Okay.
Only in the sense that it's not Miss America.
No.
Which I found out.
Is there another Vanessa Williams in this?
There's a Vanessa Williams that is Virginia Madsen's friend that goes along with her on this exploration of Candyman.
Oh, I thought that was... Oh, I got the name wrong then. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. All right. I wasn't going to correct you. Yeah,
no. Whatever. She's the mom that she tries to attack.
Is she the mom?
She's the mom that she tries to attack.
No.
Yep. And then that's what gets her arrested because they steal her baby. That's her.
That's Virginia Madsen?
Yeah. Wait, No, that's...
Didn't Dingle say her name?
I mean, yeah. Vanessa Williams?
Yeah. Hmm.
Okay, now I'm going to have to go back. Yeah. But anyway, I thought it was funny because I saw Vanessa Williams. I'm like, oh, holy crap, Miss America, you know.
Yeah.
Vanessa Williams from the Schwarzenegger movie Eraser and, mm-hmm. and all those mm-hmm. things. And yeah, I was looking and watching. And I was like, she's not in this movie. What the fuck? But apparently, there was an actual litigation because the...
Doesn't she have to use her middle name or
yeah,
something
Yeah,
like
she has
that?
To put
or
your middle initial
or something like that.
Because mm. the...
It's kind of like serial killers.
I've got a... yeah.
Yeah. As long as you have three full names, yeah.
The Screen Actors Guild rules that stage names can't be duplicated in the industry. So it had to be Vanessa L. Williams or Vanessa A. Williams, and then they eventually decided.
Well, that also explains David S. Pumpkins.
Of course it does.
Yeah. No? No other? All right. Never
mind. Nothing?
It's a Tom Hanks Saturday Night Live thing I find to be way, way funnier than it actually is, but I just love it.
I've just never heard of it.
David S. Pumpkins.
And that was all I wanted to talk about was Vanessa Williams, is that I didn't know who it was, and it wasn't who I thought it was. And that's why.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Glad we went down that road.
Let's have some more beer.
Oh, yes. We're getting a new beer. Hey, while she's pouring us this new beer, what beer are we having?
This is our bonus beer. It's Cloudy 5000. Kind of like Lee's Fax. It's a little hazy.
Oh, oh, nice.
Well
done.
The tie-in.
Look at that.
You know what? My facts are just fine. It's as I'm saying them and or reading them, I look up and I see your guys' faces that make me falter.
Are you in Lincoln's book?
Jeez.
It's like Dragnet.
Just that was funny.
But this is our first like actual hazy.
Full I'll be the hazy judge release. Of that.
Because it took us a while to get on the hazy train because we didn't really.
Yeah, good for you. By the way,
but this is definitely this is a Melvin Hazy. It's not a total fruit bomb, like you might expect. There's still a metric shit ton of hops in there.
Yeah, a lot of hop in one.
I wanted to give you a good amount because
you know how I like
the early IPAs. You'll drink your hazy. So.
Exactly. Oh my god, that's right.
I drink so much Melvin beers.
What's it like being engaged to the Melvin beer rep?
It has its benefits.
I bet it does.
You know.
Do you get to drink six packs like Dan Aykroyd's character from the Coneheads?
Some people say you don't want to meet your idols, but I mean.
Just checking out the can for this one.
It smells pretty fucking good.
I love the smell.
It tastes good too. But
it's delicious. No, that's
stupid good.
It's fantastic.
See, and that's what's so funny. There's a... Like you said, a shit ton of hops in this, which if we handed him any beer with a shit ton of hops, he'd be like, oh, yeah, they ruined this beer. But you just make it hazy, and it, like, fries all his sensors or
something. I will get behind, like, if there was a Kool-Aid guy that was filled with hazy beer and busting through people's walls, I'd be behind that. I'd back that 100%.
Oh, I think the thing with Lee is he doesn't like a bitter finish.
It's true.
And hazies, even this one that's super hoppy, you get that nice dry hop flavor in the back end, but it doesn't finish bitter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It finishes with hop flavor, but not hop bitterness.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's it exactly.
I like
love
that
the
it
hops.
Finishes dry. I like that it doesn't finish like a sweet, juicy overload.
You also don't
like
have to fucking chew it.
Yeah.
You can just drink it because it's a beer and it's actually refreshing, which is a miracle. No.
I love the hops. I love the flavor, I love the smell, I love everything, but I don't love the way IPAs handle them to a degree.
It's a double.
It's 8.2% alcohol, and it does not taste like it.
No, it really doesn't.
It does not.
This is the summer beer to have.
Also kind of Melvin's trademark. We're really good at making sneaky ass beers.
So how hard is it to find the Audi 5000 or... cloudy 5000.
Did you see the can?
I did. How much harder is it to find that one than it is to find the Killer Bees?
So Killer Bees is a year-round beer.
Okay.
Cloudy 5000 is part of what we call our RIPA series, which is our rotating double IPA series. Okay. So this is around for kind of May and June.
Does it go everywhere that the other ones go?
For the most part.
Okay, cool. Good.
It may not be in every single store, but most specialty bottle shops.
Because Melvin's all over.
Draft and things like that. We're all over the free. We just launched on the East Coast.
Okay, good.
We just launched in like Boston area.
I like that. I like
freaking rad.
Us being able to recommend things to people they can actually go get.
We have a pub opening very soon in Eureka, Missouri.
Nice.
Which is going to be all kinds of fun new things involving barrels.
Yeah.
Is this Cloudy 5000 supposed to be a spin-off of the fucking Audi 5000 from Audi? RoboCop or something?
I don't know. What does that car look like on the can, Lee?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you see the little clouds making the Audi symbol on the back of the car?
When he got his license, no, they had covered wagons. I'm sorry. Fucking, come on now. He
wasn't used to I know Audi jack shit about cars. Like, whoop,
whoop. Yeah.
No, I know jack shit about cars.
The Audi has four rings. This one has four clouds because it's cloudy.
Mm-hmm. Where's the elephant?
I think he's on one of the bumper stickers.
He is. Yeah, he's on the bumper sticker.
There's also a bumper sticker on there that somebody skis in jeans.
Yeah. There's a lot of Jackson jokes on the car. But if you look closely, you can see that Carpenter Man from 2x4 is driving.
Oh.
Or at least somebody those wearing a Viking horns. Helmet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
J.H. Jackson Hole. Oh, it says Chaney skis in jeans. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. You know, we tap on this a lot. We talk about the cool bottles and stuff. But, man, I got to believe there's a whole genre and topic surrounding the artwork and the creative drive behind beer labels and the design work and the quirkiness that goes into.
Look at the exhaust while you're saying that.
I see.
It's got that hidden.
There's an elephant there and then there's an elephant on the exhaust.
Oh, there it is. So basically, holy shit.
It looks like there's a Melvin Brewing bumper sticker. Uh-huh. And then there's also an elephant hidden in the exhaust.
I found Waldo.
I'm proud to say there's a Melvin sticker on the back of my car as well.
Fuck yeah, there is.
I noticed that coming in.
Well, on mine too.
When I leave, there's going to be about 9 of them on the back of this car. I forgot the most random fact about Melvin.
What's that?
We're super into kung fu movies and Wu-Tang.
Well, yes. Oh,
that's kind of our thing.
That's cool. It's kind of cool. So,
you can go to a Thai restaurant and watch kung fu movies and listen to Wu-Tang. Yeah. Have Thai food.
Well, speaking of music, fucking rockin' soundtrack on Candyman too.
Yes,
they did a release of it here not too long ago of the soundtrack, in 2015 or something like that.
Okay,
limited release of the soundtrack.
Yeah, I wish I got it.
Yeah,
I sat down to watch it, and it started playing that haunting music box melody that it plays, and the hairs went up on my neck and my arms because that was my ringtone for probably a solid 5 years, 15
it's about the only place
years
you have
ago
hair.
Right. And I was like, oh my god, I forgot this tune even existed, let alone that it was from this film. But yeah, one time I was obsessed, apparently.
Oh, yeah. And I thought it was incredible that movie, how old is the movie, 2 decades now or so?
Yeah, it was something 92 like so yeah. 25 years.
25 years later. Yeah. Well, 20 years later, they're saying, hey, let's release a limited edition LP of this music. That was super cool.
Yeah.
The music that really gets me, and it's very basic, it's almost carnival, but it's haunted carnival, is the music they play in Puppet Master.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, yeah, I should revisit it just for that. It's just very, very cool.
Yeah. Well, this is Philip Glass, and while I don't remember 1,000, examples of things that he's done, I do know that he's considered to be quite masterful. So let's talk about Virginia Madsen and this theory. So there is a widely believed theory, and I tried watching little snippets and interviews and stuff, and I can't find anybody saying it out loud, but I find it written all over the internet that she was hypnotized. The director thought this would be a good idea. Hypnotized her prior to the filming of the film. And before her scenes with Candyman, Tony Todd, they would say the keyword that would put her back under. So that all those times when he's talking to her and she just has that kind of glassy, faraway stare, or she starts to kind of sink to the ground or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's everywhere. It's this rampant, rampant theory.
Huh. I call urban legend
That's
bullshit.
That's what I think, too. Yeah. And then the story goes that she was just too uncomfortable by it and she didn't like the way she felt when it was happening. And so she was like, stop doing that, please. And they did. But
See, if horror flicks of that era taught us anything, the director would have deliberately made her uncomfortable to get more out of her and more reaction and more, chops.
That was definitely a 70s, 80s vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Persecutor. I don't know. I don't believe in.
Oh, shit. He was on Suspiria.
Yeah, I find that one hard, too.
Yeah.
Who was what one?
The
Philip Glass?
Dude, yeah.
He did
Suspiria.
What?
The filmography, soundtrack, Suspiria, so he did at least something.
What year?
Yeah, weird. That's the old one.
77.
Huh.
Huh. More recently, he did Stranger Things.
Oh, shit. Like, my new favorite electronic music obsession.
He was a writer for the soundtrack on Suspiria.
Okay.
And for Stranger Things, composer.
Because Suspiria had quite a bit of music that wasn't Goblin.
He's
got quite
the rabbit hole on IMDb. Like, he's done a bunch.
That's what I'm saying. He's huge. He's
like the, and across like multi-genre.
He's far beyond established. I never can remember
that examples. Unknown Danny like Elfman contribution kind of person.
What about Virginia Madsen's brother?
Yeah, just like that.
Michael Madsen.
Oh, God.
And, and their cousin. War Dogs. And their cousin Charlie Manson.
Are they actually related Madsons?
Yeah, they are related.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, he did that movie right. Secret Window. He was a composer for that.
Super, super good set design in this film. Everything felt fantastical, even if it was just like literally an apartment or a hallway or, you know, like the stairwell of these projects or whatever. It all had a vibe to it that made you kind of go like, it seems real, but it kind of doesn't at the same time. It all felt kind of dreamlike and off-putting, which I thought was really cool. Just every scene I noticed that.
Well, and you know, the movie itself, as we go through the scenarios and the plot lines, was really cool in the sense that it had a nice little like whodunit or frame up. Like the way this Candyman perpetuated his like energy growth, you know, fear of it dissipating and people not believing in him and him not having power.
Sure, which is very Nightmare on Elm Street-y. But
yeah. And the way he took Virginia
Madsen.
Words wow, names, Madsen. Man. Names.
Yeah, sin. That's right.
And the way he used her as a guinea pig to, you know, set her up and frame her and get this. Because, you know, Candyman shows up, he just kills you. He shoves a hook through you, guts you from, you know, groin to neck, and you're done. Mm-hmm. But with her, he plays with her, and he, you know, manipulates her to a direction that he needs her to go.
Definitely.
And I thought it was really cool the way they did that.
Yeah, it's cool that when you summon the Candyman and he shows up, which, spoiler alert, he shows up. It's not an urban legend. Oh, my God.
I dare you to do it.
We'll do it right after.
No.
Come on, let's do it. When he shows up, no one else sees him but you. So when someone does get murderized and then the cops run in or the next door neighbors run in or whatever, it's just you and a murderized person. No one else gets to see the Candyman, even while he's standing there talking to you.
He likes to leave weapons around, too. So then you end up picking up the weapon and you're a fucking murderer. And you're like, God damn it.
Yep.
He is the master of planting evidence.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, it is interesting that whole new element of it, of an innocent person framed, because she's being arrested for these murders and all this kind of stuff while she's actually the only one that knows who's committing them.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I love how that first unfolds, because she's all, Candyman doesn't exist. What, you know, I'm just investigating, blah, blah, blah. And she even tells this little kid who trusts her.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I'm not going to betray. You tell me about this Candyman, dude. Mm-hmm. I won't betray you.
Well, and that's because she finds out, because she has a good reason. She's not just like trying to hoodwink this kid or because she thinks she's super smart. She goes there and is confronted by a gang lord who has taken on the persona of Candyman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He wears the coat. He carries around a hook in his hand and, you know, he betrays this. So she's like, well, there's your Candyman
She's trying to find out.
So then she goes to that kid and is like,
right, part of the murders, real. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, nah, kid.
See, right there, if I was Candyman and someone's trying to impersonate my shit, I'd go kill that motherfucker. I'm serious.
Like, he can't. He just doesn't get carte blanche like that. He's got to be summoned.
Well, the thing is Candyman didn't care that someone was impersonating him. He cared that people didn't believe that he was a thing anymore. So as soon as it compromised the level of fear people had for him, then he had a fucking problem with it.
Yeah. Well, then he got back in there, kill that other motherfucker first, and then go after everybody else.
Well, he has to be summoned.
Well, he got some.
Look, man, star in your own horror movie, buddy.
He's not Freddy.
There's rules.
Nobody cares about Freddy anyways.
Hey.
That's
it. But,
because he's walking
sleeping
home.
Outside.
But that's what I thought was brilliant about this.
Urban camping.
Is that she goes and says, well, I want to check out who this Candyman is. Finds out it's just some thug lord portraying Candyman. And the thug lord shows up, beats the fuck out of her, almost kills her. And she,
in the gross pooper
room.
He smacks her with that hook right across the face.
And they arrest him and she identifies him. Boom, Candyman's over, right? Nobody's afraid of Candyman anymore. So the real Candyman shows up later and says, hey, woman, you just screwed up my mojo.
Yeah.
We got to get it going again. And he fucking does some shit to her, and she wakes up in that lady's apartment with the baby missing and the dog's head. And I was like, that's a perfect frame up. And she's like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, it was great. It's just, I didn't see that coming.
No, it really, well, I wrote a couple quotes down, and the second quote that I wrote down was from Roger Ebert, and I liked it. And he said, what I liked is that this is a horror movie that was scaring me with ideas and gore instead of simply with gore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's another really good way of putting it, that you do think your way through this one as much as you're just applauding all these like grotesque effects, which there's some pretty good gore in this.
Oh, yeah. The dog's head, I was looking at that going, oh, I know it's fake, but man.
Oh, no, I read right here that was not fake. No, I'm sorry.
The gore was good. There was a lot of really disgusting stuff. But then there was also like simple things like her either they actually beat the shit out of her, or whoever did her makeup was really fucking good.
Yeah.
Because her like black eyes and stuff, like, her face looked like she got pummeled by a metal.
She probably just got stung by a bunch of those bees, and they were like, quick, get the
let's
makeup.
Use this. I think that, I think they did an amazing job on that, because...
But it was also the 80s. They might have just smacked her.
They might have. They hypnotized her.
They hypnotized her and smacked her
around. Ready on set.
Mac.
Okay, go.
I don't understand, though, why there's a Candyman 2 and a Candyman 3 the way this one wrapped up. No, I haven't seen Candyman 2 and Candyman 3.
Okay, I watched Candyman 2 right after this one because I was all juiced. So I was like, oh, Candyman, hell yeah. So I went and watched the second one, which arguably is not terrible. It's not anywhere on the level of how creative this one was. But the thing that peeves my shit about Candyman 2 is that it ignores the ending of Candyman.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. How can it?
And I'm assuming so does 3. Because... it doesn't
start.
That's
what I wonder.
I'm
like, does it continue with the...
The way this ends, it sets the legend up to now proceed differently.
Right. Exactly.
There should be a
different torch, if you will.
A new, yeah.
I was going to say, it was definitely set up for a sequel.
Sure.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just the sequels aren't that. So it's quite possible that that's where Mr. Peele will take it when he does his, what he's calling a
That'd
sequel.
That'd be incredible.
So...
Mr. Peele, if you know anything, if you're worth your salt that everybody says you are, you will do this shit right.
Yeah, we're calling you out. We're
calling
also,
you out
thanks
right
for
now.
Listening to our
right
podcast.
Here at our...
I'm sure that's happening.
Well, he doesn't. But maybe he has an intern that does, that's like, hey, these guys say you better take care of this business.
Calling you out, fool.
And then he's going to think about
and
it.
And then he should buy some Melvin beer.
One of the 15 people that listen
or
to
we
us.
Should send him some.
Okay, you get his address, Creeper, and I'll send him some beer.
All right.
Well,
yeah, I don't know. I as far as Clive Barker film adaptations go, when we did Midnight Meat Train, I remember saying how, you know, even Hellraiser to me when I rewatch it feels kind of dated, and it feels kind of foreign. Like, it doesn't feel like a horror movie that was made for me. It always feels like I'm watching someone else's horror movie when I watch Hellraiser, which is why I kind of like some of the Hellraiser sequel better. Like, I like part two more than I enjoy part one and stuff, because they were becoming a little bit more, I don't know, Hollywoodized or whatever you want to call it, which at the time I was watching them made them feel much more accessible. The first one was just so British.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. So, I loved Midnight Meat Train because of that, because it had all those feelings and themes of a Clive Barker, but it was a, you know, it was a film made for me as the audience, so I really enjoyed it. Watching this one again, I feel the same way. Like, I feel like it still had all those same themes and those things that Clive Barker is so famous for, and his kind of dread and atmosphere and grotesque, just kind of painting a scene in a really gross way.
Yeah.
But it very much feels like, you know.
I was surprised with how well it held up. And as you were talking, a thing came to my mind. You were talking about how the set and scenery looked really good, but it also had a different, slightly different vibe.
It's kind of otherworldly. Yeah, I don't know.
It reminds me of like what you would see. There was just this hint that what a set would look like on an 80s music video, like a late 80s music video.
Oh,
or
yeah.
like... like a movie Electric Boogaloo or something like that.
Electric Boogaloo.
It obviously wasn't Turbo. That 80s and that
sure.
neon or anything like that, but it just sort of had in the background, it had that set feel to it.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of graffiti work done in almost, you know, all the scenes because it's in those projects. But the graffiti work... It doesn't feel gangstery or taggy. Like yeah. it feels very reverential and kind of like this, like you would see it in like a cathedral or some kind of a church or something like dedicated to this guy. Like it was all a little more
yeah.
grandiose, but it was still just spray paint on a wall kind of thing. But yeah, it was really, it's a really cool vibe the film has for sure.
Yeah. And for those of, I mean, I think it's a revisitor easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah, and if you find yourself like us, where you've seen it and you already know you like it, but you haven't watched it in a long time, what, like you said, revisit it. Watch it again. Go buy it again, because I think now I'm going to watch it a lot more often.
Mm-hmm. Put it in the regular rotation.
Now that the adult me has seen it again.
Because that wasn't
going to the Halloween rotation every year.
Yeah, that wasn't in any of the Halloween rotations the last 2 years.
No, it's kind of just always fallen by the wayside as something where I always go like, well, it's a very, very specific villain. I mean, you were saying at the very beginning of our sitting down today that he's not like a Freddy or a Jason or whatever. You don't think of him in that same pantheon. Mm-mm. Even though he really could be. He's just so specific, you know. Jason's got a couple masks he puts on and he machetes you. Yeah. And, you know, Myers wears his overalls and he stabs you with a knife. But he'll stab anybody, anywhere, anytime, for any reason. This Candyman guy, his background is so specific. Here he's got this weird trench coat with all the fur. He's got a chest and rib cage full of bees and honey pouring out of it. You know, he's got bees pouring out of his mouth. He's got a hook for a hand. Oh, which, by the way, the filmmakers hired a blacksmith to make that hook so it would look super period and rustic and horrible and actually be a giant metal hook, which I thought was kind of cool. But when the blacksmith found out he was making it for a horror movie, he wouldn't give it to him. Because he was like super Christian and he was no, you're not going to use my work in your filthy, horrible movie. I don't know how that wound up. Like if that's the hook we are seeing, like they just finally bribed him, but apparently it was a big problem. But he's so specific.
Yeah. And the movie is very specific in its storytelling. It literally, there's not a whole lot of offshoots. Mm-mm. It goes linear. Here's the thing. Here's stage one. Here's stage two. Here's stage three. And here's how we
get to the end. There's no real collateral damage. Like you call him, he comes, he fucks you up, and then he waits for the next person to call him, you know, knowing that he's now more powerful because people are afraid again, kind of thing.
And the way the story unfolded was very much that way, too. I thought to myself, I said, who's going to stab somebody with a hook? It's a round, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't stab him. He's a
fisherman dude. And then rip it up last summer.
Right. But then I started looking at that hook a little bit more. First of all, obviously, he's a supernatural being, so he can punch through whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
But
he doesn't do that.
And looking at it, it seems to be beveled also. So the round part that comes around, it seems to have a sharp edge so that he
kind of
pull them.
It's really
through.
Definitely rough and hewn and very. Yeah.
It's also shoved into his. Stumped.
Yeah,
which is real gross.
I went and got my McFarlane Candyman figure out and was looking at it and turned them all around different ways because I was like, oh man, he is so much cooler than I remember him being. Like,
they didn't really tell why the hook though.
Is that out of package?
Just that's a natural thing you do with the stump?
They just said that every time they talk about it in his little legend, they just blow right past it, which I was always kind of stuck in my craw, but they chopped off his hand and shoved a hook in the stump. And I'm like, why would they hook in the stump?
I don't know. But just more torture, basically, I think.
Yeah.
When he goes to scratch the bees off.
Because he needs
a
hook. Okay, that's why. He needs a goddamn hook. And if you have a problem with that, say his name and take it up with him.
Yeah. Five times.
Yeah.
No. No.
Not three.
Nope.
We're going to do it right after this. We're all going to do it.
After these we're gonna messages, make leaders. We'll be right.
And then we just never come back. Everyone's like, podcast is over.
Episode ever.
Did they all died?
Well, you know me. I love Bloody Marys. I seek them out. I saw this awesome cartoon. There's a chick standing in the mirror going, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary. I said it three times, right?
Yeah.
And then she paused and you saw her look down very scarily and on the counter next to the mirror. Was an actual Bloody Mary that magically appeared. And I was like, yes. Nice.
Does that work for Greyhounds?
I don't know, but I'm going to be there going, candy bar, candy bar, candy bar.
All peculiar.
Oh, shit.
All peculiar.
Oh, that's right.
Dude, have you had the new Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, dude? the peanut butter ones with the peanut butter on the outside?
I have not.
Mm-mm. Juan's obsessed.
You can't mess with...
No, it's a layer.
It's called Peanut Butter Lover. It's just the top layer.
The top layer. Instead of chocolate, it's peanut butter on the outside, and then the chocolate on the bottom side, and then the peanut butter in the middle.
He saw a display of them at Safeway. He like ran across the store and bought like six of them. He was so excited. I was like, "What? I'm like, where the fuck did you go,
mommy?"
I'm like loading up all the groceries, and he's like buying candy bars at self checkout.
I love it.
I've eaten half of my rations already. That's fine.
They'll make more.
No. All right. Well,
cool. Well, yeah. I mean, they don't make them. They don't make them like this much anymore. So definitely add this one to your collection. But it's
you'll be pleasantly
super
surprised.
Super whimsical idea, taken super seriously, and I think pulled off. Yeah.
Did you say whimsical?
Probably.
He's bringing it back full circle to the weird jester dude.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What did I write down about that guy? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Anyways, the original Candyman was whack. Whatever. Don't read the book. Get the movie.
Agreed.
All right. Well, go watch Candyman. Go drink Melvin beer.
Hell yeah.
Cheers. Okay. Catch you guys next time.
Peace.
Blue.